Thanks for listening to Tuned to Yesterday's Encore broadcasts. Do you enjoy the historical aspect of these old shows? Would you like to hear more in-depth tales of the performers and players that made the golden age of radio what it was? We have a weekly podcast dedicated to this called the Tuned to Yesterday Dialer, or TTY Dialer for short. It brings you stories of how radio was, along with fun with sound from radio's past, and a brief preview of the shows coming up for the week. The podcasts are about 20 minutes long, and they're posted Saturday nights and make for great listening on Sundays or whenever you want. It's the TTY Dialer podcast at WRVO.org, or listen as part of your subscription to Tuned to Yesterday on iTunes. Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and in this hour, romance from radio's past. In a little while, we'll hear Herbert Marshall and Maureen O'Sullivan in the story Dear Victim on the Silver Theater, but right now it's the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater from November 30th, 1942 on CBS, adapting the 1941 motion picture Ball of Fire, which originally starred Gary Cooper and Barbara Stanwyck on the silver screen. In this broadcast, we'll hear Paulette Goddard and Richard Hayden, along with Kay Kaiser and Gerald Moore.
Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild players in one of the most uproarious comedies of this or any other year. Samuel Goldwyn's smash farce, Ball of Fire, starring lovely Paulette Goddard as the Ball of Fire, Richard Hayden as Professor Audley, and as Professor Potts, that great romantic lover, Kay Kaiser. Professor Bertram Potts is only 35 years old, but for the past 9 years, he has been living in a dormitory with several dry-as-dust and gone-to-seed 60-year-olds, seriously working at compiling an encyclopedia. Their complete isolation has given the group a marvelous opportunity to concentrate and get out of touch with the world, particularly in the case of Professor Potts, whose specialty is English. Potts had just completed his encyclopedia article on slang when he discovered that 23 Skidoo was definitely old hat, and the article had to be rewritten. So Potts took his umbrella and rubbers and went out into the big, bad world looking for slanguage. As our play begins, Potts is safely back in the dormitory and telling his co-fuddy-duddies of his experiences while searching for slang.
Well, fellow professors, I just couldn't believe that I was hearing the English language. I simply couldn't understand my fellow American.
Still, Professor Potts, it must have been fun to get out of the library for a while.
Amusement was not my goal, Professor Audley. It was merely a coincidence that the most likely places for me to overhear living slang was at a nightclub and a baseball game.
Well, who won the ball game, Professor Potts?
Well, I'm sure I don't know, but someone smeared the apple or a two-ply poke.
That's very interesting, very interesting. What does it mean?
Well, I haven't the slightest idea. However, I've invited several of the most picturesque speakers I encountered to help me in compiling my new article on slang. They will arrive at 10 tomorrow morning.
What about the nightclub?
Oh, it was there, Professor Robinson, that I found the person with the most bizarre vocabulary. Miss Sugarpuss O'Shea. She has an inexhaustible fund of slang.
Was she blonde or brunette?
Oh, I couldn't say. I do remember, though, that she told me to shove in my clutch and scram.
Oh, dear. That sounds very unfriendly.
Oh, not at all, not at all. As a matter of fact, Sugarpuss was very friendly. Just as I was leaving her dressing room, she told me that I was one of the nicest jerks she had ever met.
What a jerk?
Well, I'm not positive, but it apparently describes me.
It could be a slang expression meaning a professor.
Well, that is a distinct possibility, Audley.
Well, in that event, we are quite a group of jerks.
Indeed we are, Professor Audley. Indeed we are.
What was it like backstage, Potts? Did Sugarpuss wear tights?
Well, I didn't notice. As I tried to explain to you, my trip to the nightclub was all in the interest of science.
Who in the world could be ringing our doorbell at this time of night?
It might be a special delivery letter.
Yes, or a telegram.
Well, open the door, Potts, and see what it is.
Hidey-ho, Professor. Hidey-ho.
Why, Miss Sugarpuss.
Greetings, Jake. Let's educate.
Say, what's cooking?
Cooking? I don't smell anything. Oddly, have you been preparing yourself a midnight snack?
Oh, me? Oh, dear, no.
Oh, let it go. Let it go. Who are the zombies?
Oh, I beg your pardon. Miss Sugarpuss O'Shea, these are my colleagues.
Hello, characters. Take five.
Oh, Miss O'Shea, gentlemen never take money from women.
Forget it. Forget it. Say, who decorated this joint? That mug that shot Lincoln?
Oh, this is our workroom.
This is solid murder. Let's start the joint jumping. Get on the beam, characters. Light the front burner. Come on, let's get to work.
What? But I wouldn't think of imposing on you at this time of night. We must wait until morning.
Well, you're pitching, Mr. Nothing by Nothing.
Why, I beg your pardon.
Well, suit my suit and read my pleading, skip it.
Well, it was awfully nice of you to stop by, Miss Sugarpuss, and you made it. But now, if you'll permit me, I'd better bid you good night.
Okay, good night. Where do I sleep?
Where do you sleep? Well, where's your home?
Up on Riverside Drive, but I'm going to sleep here.
She could sleep in my room.
Professor Audley.
And I could sleep with Professor Puff. I always do when there's an electrical storm.
I don't want to throw anyone out of their bed. I'll sleep here in the library on the Davenport.
Well, that might be better.
Solid murder, Jackson. And now, if you'll take your gang upstairs, I'll grab some shut-eye.
Well, certainly, Miss O'Shea. Come, gentlemen.
Good night, Miss O'Shea.
Oh, if there's anything you need, just call us, Miss O'Shea.
Where's the telephone?
Oh, near the door leading into the hall. Good night.
Good night. Good night. How did I ever get in this joint? Snow White and Seven Dwarfs.
Hello?
Hello, Asthma.
Yeah, Shuggy?
Yeah. I finally talked this bunch of characters into letting me stay here.
Good. Now stay there for God's sake till me and Pastrami fix you up. Right now, they just suspected.
Well, don't forget where you parked me.
Shuggy, that's one thing you don't need to worry about.
Good. Listen, I better ring off now. I gotta get up in the morning and spout slang for this professor. Good night.
Why, Miss O'Shea, I'm very grateful to you for your most illuminating dissertations. However, there is one word, the meaning of which still eludes me. That word is corny. What does that mean?
Well, kind of hick, loose tooth, you know, like the old professor.
Oh, do you mean Professor Audley?
No, no, Professor K. Kaiser, you know, on the radio. Evening, folks, hi-yo.
I'm afraid I never heard of him. Could you give me a more specific example of something corny?
When a guy comes to see a girl and says, "Let's turn off the light, it hurts my eyes," that's corny.
Oh, I see. The implication being that the fella was trying to pull some hoity-toity.
Boy, you're mellow as a cello, but you're catching on, Professor. And now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go and give the other professors a conga lesson.
Conga lesson? Now, Miss O'Shea, I understand.
All right, scientist, keep it that way. Get out of this dump, I don't know.
Hey, Shuggy. Me.
Asthma. Well, it's about time. I thought you had amnesia and forgot where you parked me. You said it was for one night.
Now listen, babe, you're hot as a pistol. The DA's got 100 guys out looking for you.
Okay, you wait here. I'll get my things together in 2 seconds flat.
Now wait a second. If you leave here, the cops will pick you up and Joe will be on his way to the hot seat.
But then what are you doing here?
Well, I came here to talk for Joe.
Oh.
Shuggy, he wants to marry you.
Joe wants to marry me?
Yeah, him and the lawyer figured it out. You see, if you're married to Joe, you can't testify against him.
You mean it took the DA to make him pop the question?
Yeah. He sent you a very tender love message, though. He said to tell you he gets more laughs out of you than any dame he ever knew.
Why, that's Joe, all right. Never gets too sloppy.
Yeah. You know, the wedding's got to be a fast one, though. Over in Jersey someplace. You'll get the final dope on where to meet us tomorrow morning. Joe will call you around 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, meantime, Shuggy, don't leave this house.
Oh. stand for me, Professor Potts?
Yes, Miss O'Shea. Circumstances over which neither of us has control forced me to ask you to leave.
Wait a minute. Did you say leave?
Immediately.
Oh, but you can't throw me out. Wait a minute. What about the slang? You don't know what this means. I'll get you on the Don Amici.
Don Amici? No.
A Don Amici is a telephone on account of because he invented it.
Oh, very interesting. And make no mistake, I shall regret the absence of your keen mind. Unfortunately, it's inseparable from an extremely disturbing body.
Well, of course, some people have said that little sugar is 112 pounds of quite all right.
That's just it. No one's allowed that much sugar.
All right. I'll leave sometime tomorrow.
No, right away.
Oh, but I can't. That is, I... Poppy, look at me. So, why do you think I came here in the first place?
To assist in the research.
No, I didn't. I came on account of you.
Me?
On account of I couldn't stop thinking about you, Poppy. After you left my dressing room, and on account of I thought you were clumsy and cute and pretty.
Pretty?
Maybe I'm crazy, but to me, you're a regular yum-yum type.
Yum-yum? We never got to that.
Well, we've got to it now, and now that you're throwing me out anyway, I can tell you that I'm wacky about you. I'm just plain wacky. Have you ever been with a wack before?
No, but I've been close to a couple of ways.
Come here to me, you great big academic Casanova.
Please, Miss O'Shea, what are you going to do?
I'm going to show you what yum-yum is. Bend down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's yum. And here's another yum. And here's yum-yum. Well, what do you think of that? Well, what do you know? Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
And so the curtain falls on Act One of Ball of Fire, starring Kay Kaiser, Paulette Goddard, and Richard Hayden. When Sugar Puss gave Professor Potts that last yum, Potsy went off his nut. He went out and bought an engagement ring and asked Sugar Puss to marry him. And he did it with such sincerity that Sugar Puss didn't have the heart to say no or tell him that she was due to marry a murdering gangster named Joe Lilac. As a matter of fact, Sugar Puss began to realize that Potsy had his points, despite his low blood pressure. As the curtain rises on the second act of Ball of Fire, starring Paulette Goddard as Sugar Puss O'Shea, Kay Kaiser as Professor Bertram Potts, and Richard Hayden as Professor Oddly, it's the next morning, and Sugar Puss is waiting for a phone call from the gangster, Joe Lilac.
Now, why does everything have to happen to me? I worked for 10 years trying to make something of myself, finally get Joe Lilac to pop the question, and then, like a moron, I have to fall in love with an English professor who makes $3,200 a year. Oh, go ahead and ring. If you hadn't made me come here in the first place, I wouldn't be in this mess. So keep your receiver on. I'm coming. Hello.
Hello, Sugie. It's Joe.
I know.
Why, Sugie, what's the matter? Ain't you glad you're getting a chance to marry me?
I don't know whether I am or not.
What? Hey, you ain't falling for any of them professors, are you?
What if I am?
It wouldn't be good, Sugie. For you or the professors. You know, I gotta get married to you so the DA can't make you testify against me.
Oh, I see. Say, you're really quite a guy, Joe.
Well, I think you're ahead. Now, listen, some way you got to talk to them professors into driving you over to Jersey. That's where I am.
Why can't I take a bus?
Because the cops are watching for you. Make them long hairs drive you down here.
Yes, I don't.
Keep your dog with me or some of the boys will make certain you ain't in any condition to testify against me ever. You get it?
Yes, I get it.
Good. Don't take too long or I'll send some of the boys over to mess the professors up a little. Sort of encourage them.
Leave the professors out of this. They haven't hurt you.
Yeah. Not only haven't, they couldn't. Now get going, you hear me?
I heard you, Joe. I heard you.
the only one of your associates who has been married, sir. I know whereof I speak. If you feel the need of any guidance, may I suggest that you turn to me?
Well, thank you, Professor Audley.
Genevieve, my wife, has been dead for some 24 years. But I have relived every moment of our happiness many times. My experience is entirely at your disposal, Professor, now that you are engaged to Miss Sugarpuss.
Well, really, Audley, I don't know how
I judge that I do not have to start with basic principles. Being a botanist, I find an astonishing parallel between a woman's heart and the windflower, or Anemone nemorosa. Perhaps you know the plant. Sensitive and delicate, one rough, impetuous bee can completely destroy the bloom.
Well, I'm much obliged, darling.
Tenderness, that is what I advocate. Tenderness and patience. Genevieve, my wife, was a watercolorist. Therefore, after the wedding reception, we went straight to the Catskills. We spent there a beautiful week, filled with promise, and returned to New York with 14 excellent watercolors.
Well, I tell you, watercolor. I appreciate your interest,
Arnie.
And
do please, I beg of you, be patient. I remember for 3 months, every time I bade good night, I would kiss the palm of her little hand, astonished at my own boldness.
Well, just a moment, Arlie. I recognize the beauty and delicacy of the relationship you described, but I'm afraid I'm a lot bolder than you are.
Yes.
I'm a man in love. I want to crush her in my arms.
Oh, my goodness.
I think of Sugarpuss every waking moment. Well, if our marriage had been postponed, were to be... Now, listen to that, Audley. I don't know my tenses anymore. I've gone goofy, slap-happy. I can't keep my mind on the anemone.
Anemone, sir.
Thank you. Or rough, impetuous bees, either. I couldn't even wait for 14 excellent watercolors. Now, what do you think of that?
I think it's wonderful, Posse. Just wonderful.
You think... What? Did you hear me talking to Audley?
Every word of it, Posse. I couldn't help it.
Oh, you'll have to forgive me.
Oh, don't apologize, Posse. It was illuminating. Come here, you great big yum-yum.
Oh, dear me.
What are you worrying about? It's my blood pressure.
Enjoy yourself, Posse. That's a goodbye kiss.
Goodbye? Where are you going?
Over to Jersey to see a dog about a man.
Of course, if you don't want to tell me.
Well, I don't.
Then you mean that you and I are not going to be married?
I'm afraid not, Posse.
And you don't feel that you owe me an explanation?
Sure I do, but I'm not going to give you one. Goodbye, Posse.
I could kill you for coming over here alone, Shuggy.
Sure you could. Why don't you? After all, you're Joe Lollock.
I told you to have that bunch of professors drive you here.
That's right, but I was too smart for you on that deal, Joe. I wasn't going to deliver those cherubs into your dirty hands.
Okay, Weisenheimer. I'll take care of you after we're married. Begin a justice to the peace, Pastrami.
Okay, boss.
You're rushing things a little, Joe.
Huh?
Listen, I've changed my mind, Joe. I'm not going to marry you. You were right. I do love one of the professors, and I'm going to marry him or nobody.
Well, isn't that sweet? You love one of the professors.
Yes, I love him. He looks like a giraffe, and I love him. I love him. I just love him because he's the kind that gets drunk on a glass of milk. I love the way he blushes and the way he doesn't know how to kiss a big goof. You see, I love him, Joe. I may never see him again, but I'm not going to marry you. Not if you tie a ton of cement around my neck and throw me into the East River like you did the others.
Then I guess maybe you better talk to your professor.
I told you before, leave him out of this.
Just imagine him on the bottom of the East River. You wouldn't like that to happen to him, would you, Sugarpuss?
It ain't funny, McGee.
Who said it's funny? I mean business. If you don't say I do, like a nice little bride...
You can't do that, Joe.
Too late, Shuggy. Some of the boys have already gone to pick up your professor.
What are you trying to do, put the screws on me?
You said it. Right where it hurts the most. Right in the neighborhood of the heart.
Well, I don't believe you, Joe. You wouldn't dare fool around with anyone who wasn't connected with some kind of a racket.
Maybe talking to the boys on the phone will convince you.
What do you mean?
Just phone the professor's house. Asma will tell you about it.
I think you're bluffing.
There's the phone. Find out for yourself.
Who's that?
Me. Asthma.
Asthma, what are you doing at the professor's?
Oh, a couple of us just dropped in on the boys with our typewriters.
What are you going to do?
Well, that's up to the boss, Shuggy. We're just waiting for orders.
Can we make a deal now, Shuggy?
Sure we can, Brother Rat. Bring on your justice of the peace.
Come away from me! Get away, you!
What was that?
Nothing, Joe. Everything's all right now.
Now, Mr. Asthma, this is your last chance. If you don't tell us where Miss Sugarpuss is being held, we'll be forced to torture you.
Go ahead. I've been given the third degree by experts.
Yes, but you haven't been tortured by anyone as expert as Professor Robinson. He's not only an international authority on the subject, he's on the rationing board.
He's practically a thief.
Is that so? Well, you can't scare me.
Very well, then, Professor Robinson. Proceed.
Well, it's really very simple. One places this feather between the 12th and 13th vertebrae and whirls it rapidly.
Cut it out! You're tickling me! Hey, stop it! Stop it! What are you trying to do? What are you killing me? Stop it! I'll tell you anything. I'll tell you anything you want to know.
Are you sure this is the place, Asthma?
Yes, this is it, Todd. So you can see Miss Sugarpuss. She's standing with another man in front of somebody who's performing a ceremony. I can hear what they're saying.
Now repeat after me. I, Joseph Lilac.
I, Joseph Lilac.
Head of Murder Incorporated.
Take thee, Catherine O'Shea.
What about me, Catherine O'Shea?
Oh, Christ, you want that professor you're stuck in East River?
No.
Well, then get with it. I want the ceremony finished.
I don't.
What's that?
Sounds like the cops are beating down the door.
Cops, if they followed you here, I'll...
You're what, Mr. Lilac?
Who are you?
He's my guy, Potsy!
Mr. Lilac, this is what is known as an upstick.
Stick up, Potsy.
Oh, thank you.
All right, so what happens now?
I'm about to deliver to you, Mr. Lilac, the beating of your life.
You're going to give me a beating?
Exactly. However, I feel I must warn you that for the past hour, I have been studying a book on how to become a commando.
Well... Ain't that wonderful?
Well, in fairness to you, I feel that I must offer you an opportunity to read the book, too. I don't want to take an unsportsmanlike advantage.
Well, now, that's mighty white of you, Professor. Let me see the book.
Why, certainly. Oh, wait.
Oh, why, you rat. You hit him while he was trying to play fair.
You dope.
Oh, you took an unfair advantage of me, Mr. Lilac. Now I'm forced to use those punches I've been reading about.
Okay, Potsy, but I warn you.
This will only lead to bloodshed.
Okay, Lilac, here I come, ready or not. Here I come. Oh, this is known as a 1-2, Mr. Lilac.
Give it to me.
Oh, boy. And this is an uppercut. See, page 23.
Did you conquer the bounder, Paul?
Did he conquer him? There he is on the floor, boys. Wrap him up and take him away.
Yes, secure his hands and feet, gentlemen. Mr. Lilac is not an honorable man.
Understatement just hit a new low.
We arrived in time to interrupt the ceremony, did we not?
You not only interrupted it, you disintegrated it, if I know what I mean. It calls for a celebration.
Primitive people customarily dance to celebrate victory.
That's an excellent idea, Miss Sugarpuss. Would you lead us in that conga you were teaching us?
Oh, I'd love to, Professor Audley, but if I remember correctly, Potsy threw me out of the house for teaching you that conga.
Oh, but he wouldn't know, I'm sure. He might even join us.
Would you, Potsy?
Would I? Come on, children. Yes, dance.
Yes, dance.
The Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater on Tuned to Yesterday from November 30th, 1942 on CBS, adapting the Oscar-nominated motion picture Ball of Fire. The star Paulette Goddard was in an Oscar-winning picture in the same year of the broadcast called Reap the Wild Wind, co-starring Ray Milland and John Wayne. It's an hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now we hear Herbert Marshall and Maureen O'Sullivan as stars in Dear Victim on the Silver Theater. The CBS radio episode first heard on February 26th, 1939.
International Silver Company presents The Silver Theater, starring Herbert Marshall and Maureen O'Sullivan in Dear Victim, directed by Conrad Nagel. Brought to you in behalf of two of the greatest names in silverware, International Sterling, world-famous solid silver, and 1847 Rogers Brothers, America's finest silver plate.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Conrad Nagel, welcoming you to the 22nd of the new series of Silver Theater Dramatic Productions. Before we introduce today's play and its players, we'd like to announce that next week, we'll welcome back to Silver Theater Ginger Rogers. And in weeks to come, you'll hear such brilliant stars as Joan Crawford, Lee Tracy, Shirley Ross, Helen Hayes, and others. But now the lights grow dim and the silver curtain rises on the first act of Dear Victim by Grover Jones and True Boardman, starring Herbert Marshall as Robert Desmond and Maureen O'Sullivan as Eileen O'Rourke, with Eric Snowden as Barclay. Derby Day at Epsom Downs, gaily event of the British sporting year, when gentleman and gypsy, banker and bookmaker, royalty and roustabout are one and all slaves for the day to the whim of fortune. And as our curtain rises, the moment of moments is at hand, when into the straightaway and driving for the finish come the horses that carry the hopes and fears of all who watch them and millions more besides. As they near the finish, Heather Queen, 100-to-1 shot, is out in front, with Golden Lad, the favorite, coming up. For a moment, they're stride for stride, and then the finish. It's Golden Lad by half a length. The crowd goes mad, while in a box on the upper tier of the grandstand.
A fine race, Mr. McIntyre. As fine a race as I ever have seen, Mr. McIntyre.
But your wager was on Heather Queen, Mr. Desmond.
A mere £2,000. But your husband's horse won, and finally, too. Very finely. Congratulations, Mrs. McIntyre.
Name of heaven, man. Are you flesh or are you iron? You lose a fortune because your horse loses by a head, and your only words are congratulations for someone else.
Well, I'm glad for you. And now, about our private bet. Barclay. Where's that man of mine? Barclay.
Yes, Mr. Desmond, sir.
My American estate, Barclay. I made a wee wager with Mr. McIntyre here that if his horse beat mine in the race just now, I'd sell it to him at half its worth.
The American estate, sir, you're selling that?
I am. What about the size, Barclay? About around 8,000 acres, is it not?
More nearly 10,000, sir. Some of the finest terrain in all of southern New Mexico, overlooking the River Rio Grande.
It all sounds perfect, lad, but I feel some guilt about the price. It's not enough.
It's the price I mean, sir. Food is your wife. And there's not good induce you to take a thousand more. Anyway, nothing to fill a Scotchman.
You're a braw lad, Robert Desmond. They will meet in the morning to close the deal,
aye. And you know, it's only proper we should have that you should have an estate on the other side. For as I recall it now, there was a McIntyre who practically molded American history.
It is the price I have named, Herr von Müller, foolishly or wisely, and I will not accept a fenig more. Anyway, not for me, fellow showman.
Jawohl, mein Herr Desmond.
You know, it is only proper that you should have an estate on the other side, mein Herr. As I recall it now, there was a von Müller who practically molded American history.
Eh bien, Monsieur Bouchard, eh bien. But this is the price I have named, and I do not accept a centime more. Anyway, not for me. Not for me, fellow Frenchman.
Bien, Monsieur Desmond, it is agreed.
And you know, Bouchard, it is only proper that you should have an estate there on the other side. For as I recall it now, there was a Bouchard who practically molded American history. That, Signor Alberti, is the price I have named, and nothing would induce me to take a little more. Oh, no, boss, it's no use. We'll have to forget about Signor Alberti for a while. For some reason, the Italian escaped me.
But if you'll recall, you also had trouble with the Russian, sir, and you finally mastered it. The Italian will come. It's only a matter of time.
Indeed. Well, I'm not so sure that I care, boss.
Not care?
I'm about fed up. I'm tired of dashing from country to country, staying in one place only until we've lined up a victim, and then having sold him, rushing on somewhere else. You may believe it or not, but I was positively reluctant to cash Monsieur Bouchard's check before we left Paris.
Reluctant, sir? Mm. Why? Is it your fault if people insist on buying your property from you?
Insist, Barker? circuitous plans of ours have nothing to do with it. Accidents and all the rest.
Well, we didn't make human nature what it is, sir. And if it's the fact that a Scotchman will more readily trust a Scotchman, a German, a Swede, and so on, are we to be blamed for taking advantage of that fact? Particularly when I have the accents to teach you, and you, sir, have the, shall I say, savoir-faire to carry them off. Ah, what an actor you would have made, sir.
You flatter me about this. There is one thing you overlook, the matter of conscience. Aren't you ever the least disturbed by the moral aspect of our activities?
Not at all, sir. After all, you were the real victim in the first place. The injustice of it all. Your Uncle Joseph going off to America, then dying and leaving you 100,000 acres in New Mexico.
Uncle Joseph could hardly be blamed for dying, Barton.
But he could be blamed, sir, for fostering false hopes. That trip we made, sir, to your American estate, and our first sight of them. Miles, actually miles of desert.
That's the river, Barton. Don't forget the river.
A moist mirage, sir, if I may call it that. A moist mirage complete with quicksand.
Well, I never told you this. So there was a strong rumor that my Uncle Joseph came by the entire 100,000 acres in a poker game.
A poker game? You mean he won, sir?
No, Barclay, he lost.
I believe it. And now, what of the future, sir?
Future, Barclay?
Quite, sir. The only prospect I've been able to line up for us is Signor Alberti in Rome. But if you feel your Italian is not yet equal to the task, well...
Suppose we simply rest a while. What time do we arrive in Nice?
At 7, sir.
Good. That won't be too late to drive over to Monte Carlo.
Oh, not Monte Carlo, sir. Surely you remember the last time.
Barclay, there's an indescribable something that draws me to Monte Carlo once again, and this time I shall win.
Very well, sir. But, Mr. Desmond, just in case you shouldn't, sir, wouldn't it be as well to, shall we say, remain incognito for just a day or so, when you first arrive, I mean?
In other words, you want me to lie low while you line up another victim, is that it?
You put it so eloquently, sir. After all, there is still that one last section of your American estate to be disposed of, and...
Barclay, you're right, as always, and it shall be done. Until you find out what nationality I can afford to be, I'll compromise by being international with my French. But you needn't fear. I'm going to win. I have a system about to...
Faites vos jeux, mesdames, messieurs. Faites vos jeux. Make your bet.
Pardon me, sir, but could I trouble you to put this on my number?
Comment? Que voulez-vous?
My number, 27. I can't reach it. Would you be so kind?
Monsieur speaks no English, mademoiselle. Here, if you please, I shall place it for you. Bien. Rien va plus.
Three.
Oui, the mademoiselle is correct. Trois et noir.
Oh, them's the last three chips, Mr. Banker, and me that swore I'd break the bank at Monte Carlo. What are the chances of you doing something about it this time?
I can try, mademoiselle. Faites vos jeux.
Pardon me, monsieur. Would you? Oh, I forgot. You don't speak.
Mais oui, mademoiselle. 27 comme ça, hein?
Oh, merci. I didn't think that you understood.
26, 26 et noir. A pity, mademoiselle. You missed by a single point. You wish more chips, perhaps?
No, merci. I don't think I'll play anymore. Well, thank you just the same. Thank you.
Coupier. Monsieur.
Gardez mes chatons.
Oh, bon, monsieur. Et maintenant, faites vos jeux, mesdames, messieurs.
Mademoiselle. Mademoiselle.
Yes? Who is it? Oh, you.
Oui, mademoiselle.
Oh, monsieur, I hope that because I asked you to place my bet for me in there, you don't think that... Oh, but you don't speak any English, do you?
I do not. But perhaps I do speak a bit of Irish.
But glory be. Will you tell me, what was the idea of a fellow Irishman playing the stinks on me in there and me trying to keep them foreigners from winning all me money?
Sure, you mustn't be quitting when you're losing. Come back and play until you win.
Well, to be truthful, sure I have no money left.
I'll lend you some. You can pay me back from what you win.
And do I look to you like a girl who'd borrow money from a total stranger?
But I'm not a stranger. We're fellow countrymen. Probably the only two Irishmen in all of Monte Carlo at just this moment.
Do you think so now?
Not for knowing each other, that's quickly remedied. I'm Robert Desmond.
Oh, are you indeed?
Well?
Well?
Well, the truth to tell, I was just slightly curious who you might be.
Oh, were you now? Well, truth to tell, I might be almost anyone. But if you're really curious about it, my name is O'Rourke.
O'Rourke? A fairish name is O'Rourke.
Oh, it is indeed. And perhaps you find Eileen is only fairish, too.
Eileen. Sure, and it would be a name like that.
Eileen, Maureen, Kathleen. A name as Irish as the Isle herself. Faith, no other name would suit you.
I think I'd best be going now, Mr. Desmond. Good night.
Wait. I must see you again. Have dinner with you. Lunch, tomorrow.
Dinner? Lunch? Which would you be meaning?
Well, why not both?
You overlook one thing, Mr. Desmond. There happens to be a Mr. Thomas O'Rourke, who happens to be my father, and who happens to be in Monte Carlo,
Your
too.
Father. Well, bring him along. Both of you be my guests.
All right. Perhaps we will. Mind you now, I said perhaps. Then, on the other hand, perhaps we won't. Good night, Mr. Desmond.
Good night. Good night, Irene.
Oh, Mr. Desmond, sir, you must have won, judging by your face, sir.
Won, Barker?
At the roulette, sir, surely.
Ah, can you imagine? Sure, and I clean forgot it, I had.
Sure, and you clean forgot. And may I ask, sir, when the green mantle descended?
Just 10 minutes ago, Barker. I told you we should come to Monte Carlo.
Indeed, sir.
She's beautiful, Barker. She's perfect. You can see her eyes, blue and laughing. Her hair, with just the faintest shade of red in it.
If I may make so bold, sir, who is she?
Her name's Eileen, Barker. Eileen O'Rourke.
O'Rourke? And her father, sir, he wouldn't be Thomas O'Rourke?
Why, yes, as a matter of fact, he is.
Ah, then you were right, sir. Monte Carlo has brought us luck. To think that you should have started it off so well.
Started it off? What are you talking about?
The girl's father, Thomas O'Rourke. I had him all picked out, sir. He's our next, our final victim.
This is Conrad Nagel again, ladies and gentlemen, taking advantage of this brief moment of intermission between Act One and Two of our performance to bring you the familiar voice of our Silver Theater spokesman. Once again, the lights are being dimmed and the silver curtain rises on the concluding act of Dear Victim, starring Herbert Marshall as Robert Desmond and Maureen O'Sullivan as Eileen O'Rourke. Three weeks have passed. Three extremely Irish weeks for the man with many countries who is Robert Desmond. Yet somehow, to the despair of Barclay, the final coup, the sale of the last of the American estates, has not taken place. And it looks as though it never will. For, as our curtain rises...
Daddy and I both want to say goodbye to you, Robert.
It's been a privilege in all you, Desmond. Truth to tell you, the first Irishman that ever went to America and came back again, I'd get up and fall.
I'm honored to pull off.
You probably guessed by now, Robert, but Daddy isn't very fond of America.
Well, aren't you over fond enough of the two of us? Since she was four, she's been talking of going to New York and California and all such blather. Sure, you haven't helped it any with the talk of those estates of yours.
I'm sure they couldn't compare to your Donnelly Castle, Rook.
You can be sure they don't. We may not have 10,000 acres, but we've tradition. 800 years of them. And a castle that Brian Brew himself...
Now, would... Daddy, sure, Robert's not interested in all that. And besides, you started to say goodnight.
Huh? Oh, I did, did I? Well, good night then. Eileen, you're coming along upstairs.
I'll be just a minute. Oh, please, Daddy.
Well, see, it is no more.
I believe it.
What don't you believe?
That I'm actually talking to you alone. You realize I haven't since that first night.
When I was so unlucky as we left, and you were playing your system. What happened to that system, by the way?
I think the less said about that, the better.
You've had bad luck ever since you've been here.
Bad luck? The only real piece of luck I've ever had was when a blue-eyed Irish girl happened to have the place next to me at that roulette table.
Oh, Robert.
Eileen.
I must go. Truly, Daddy will be...
And when shall I see you again?
Oh, who knows? We sail tomorrow, and Donnelly Castle is pretty far from the Desmond Estate in New Mexico.
You're right. It's much too far. What can we do about it, Eileen?
I'm not sure how would I be knowing. But, of course, if when my father and I sail on that boat from Marseille tomorrow, if I'm sailing, if a certain Irish-American should happen to be on board, and if he should happen all of a sudden to get extremely interested in old Irish castles, well, all I can say is that Thomas O'Rourke is a very hospitable man. Good night, Mr. Desmond.
Eileen.
Tonight?
Yes, Barclay. We're sailing from Marseille tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
sailing?
For Dublin.
The O'Rourke. Excellent.
It's anything but excellent.
I know, sir. I've noticed that. You're not functioning with your usual speed in this particular case. Something seems to have happened to that savoir faire we were speaking of not long ago.
Never mind about my savoir faire. Start packing.
Very good, sir. You know, I'm sure of it, sir. There's just one answer.
One answer?
The girl. It hardly seems chivalrous, but you must influence the father through the daughter, sir.
What are you driving at, Barclay?
This, sir. This book. If there's one universal failing of young Irish girls, it's poetry. Particularly the poetry of Thomas Moore.
Barclay, what?
For example, sir, this one. The time I've lost in wooing, in watching and pursuing, the light that lies in woman's eyes has been my heart's undoing. The wisdom
That's
of...
That's enough of that. You'll start packing, Barclay.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir.
You should be.
Very good, sir. Very good.
Barclay?
Yes, sir.
Let me see that book, will you?
Mr. Desmond, sir. She's alone, forward on the hurricane deck.
Listen, Barclay, you're my vet, not my confidential spy.
I'm sorry, sir, truly, only I thought.
Well, then don't think.
I understand, sir. Believe me, I suppose I should have warned you.
Warned you? Warned
yes,
me?
Sir. If there's one thing that's fatal to our business, it's a woman. That is, when woman in the abstract becomes a woman in particular. In other words, a woman is the proverbial monkey wrench in the proverbial work.
Will you go away and leave me alone before I wring your proverbial neck?
But of course, sir.
Wait a minute. Where did you say Miss Irene was?
Did I say so?
Yes, you say. Where is she?
Well, I'm afraid she's on the hurricane deck forward, sir. I'm afraid.
Irene.
Robert. Oh, she's a beautiful evening.
Beautiful?
Do you know what I was doing? I was looking off to the north. The train is over there. And people are being killed and wounded. Oh, sir, it seems all wrong somehow for some people to be suffering so much while other people are...
Yes, while other people?
I was going to say while other people are so happy. But then I suppose no one's really and truly whole kick and caboodle happy, are they?
I suppose not.
Daddy tells me he's invited you to General Castle, and you're coming. I'm glad.
Are you now?
Would you not like to go down and dance? It'd be a pity to be wasting the music.
Irene.
Yes, Robert.
Have I ever told you how beautiful you are?
Well, nothing less than supposed to hear things from your eyes. Then maybe you have. A little.
Have you never felt things too deeply to be able to find just the words for them?
I can imagine it, Robert.
Irene, listen to me.
I'm listening.
The time I've lost in wooing, in watching and pursuing, the light that lies...
In woman's eyes, has been me heart's undoing. But that's how the rest of it goes. Did you forget?
I did not forget. But those are someone else's words, Irene. And when you have verses for me, sure, they'll be my own.
Will they know?
And there's something I want you to remember. Will you do that?
I'll remember. I promise you.
Then it's this. That there are times when a man can hate himself for what he is and wish with all his heart that he was something else.
That's a strange thing for you to say.
Well, it takes the place of a lot of other things I'd rather say.
Oh, I see.
Look at me.
There's no need.
Why, Irene, you...
You've got to listen to me, Robert. Dunelly Castle, in spite of all you've heard my father say about it, I hate the place, and there's nothing I want more than to get away.
Irene.
Remember once you said you might dispose of your estates in America? Well, I've been talking to my father about buying them.
About buying them?
Of trading them. No, trading our estates in Ireland for yours over there. And I believe that with your help, my father could be won around.
You want me to help you sell your father?
Oh, please, Robert. America's always been my dream. And from what you say of your estates, there's no place I'd rather live. Oh, please, Robert. Help me win my father to the trade. You must. You can't know what this means to me.
Well, Desmond, you
you've seen Dunelli Castle for yourself, and if you have a heart, you've come to feel much of the tradition that clings to our very walls.
I have indeed, sir.
But since Eileen has her foolish heart sent on this American estate of yours, we'll make the trade. You have here a map of your estate.
Yes.
Here it is, sir, and I took it on myself to have a solicitor draw up a bill of sale, sir.
10,000
acres. If you value it at £10,000...
That has been the figure, sir.
Well, that same amount is only a fair price for the castle here. I have an agreement drawn up, too. Eileen. Eileen! Oh, where is that girl? If you'll but wait, I'll fetch it.
It's working splendidly, sir. You know, of course, what he's doing.
What?
He's trying to bilk you, sir. This castle isn't worth a farthing over 4,000, and he knows it. And he thinks he's getting property worth 10 by the exchange.
Indeed.
You're not really enthusiastic, sir, considering what this means. Despite your losses at Monte Carlo, we still have some 6,000. Then with the 4 or 5 that Dunelli Castle will bring...
Darcy, will you kindly stop making a noise like an adding machine?
Here's it. All ordered and shipshape.
Oh, Robert, Daddy tells me you've agreed to make the trade.
We have that. We've been...
It's all done with the signing. Uh-huh. No Rourke. Signing away Dunelli. Oh, well, give me the pen. We'll get it over.
Daddy, sir, you mustn't feel like this, no.
Well, what matter how I feel?
It matters a great deal, Mr. O'Rourke.
What's that?
Mr. Desmond.
Quiet, Barty. I made up my mind. Mr. O'Rourke, there's something I want you to understand, you and Eileen.
Yes, Robert, what?
Come in. Well, what is it?
A telegram just come for you, sir. They said it was most urgent.
A telegram? Well, but give it to me.
Yes, sir.
Oh, good heavens.
Daddy, what does it say? Are you...
I'm all right. All right, Eileen. It's just that our agreement, Mr. Desmond, I shan't be able to go through with it now. This makes it impossible. I'm sorry, believe me.
But Eileen, my dear, if your father's in some sort of trouble, there's a chance that I can help.
Oh, you couldn't, Robert. Believe me.
I'll believe you when you look up here at me and tell me what is wrong.
All right, Robert. My father can't trade Dunelli Castle to you because he must sell it at once for cash. He must have money now.
But why?
Investments, Robert. Speculations that were worthless. And now there's a debt that must be met. And only cash can meet it.
How much does he need?
Oh, it's nearly 4,000. So you see, there's no hope, Robert.
Is there not? Perhaps there is. Eileen, how much is Dunelli Castle really worth? In cash, I mean.
Why do you ask that?
Because I'm going to pay your father what it's worth, with the understanding that when he's ready, he can buy it back for the same price.
Oh, Robert, but why?
Why? Because you made me want to do something, and to be something I've never been, Eileen. And this is the beginning.
Robert.
I love you, Eileen.
I can't do it. I can't.
Eileen, look at me. You're crying.
You've got to know, Robert.
You've got to know, Eileen.
You're not what I think.
What are you trying to say?
That I'm... What are you trying to say?
Just this, that I'm not Irish. My estates in America are desert, and that I love you.
Oh, Robert, Robert.
What were you trying to say?
That I'm not Irish. That Dad and I never own more than an option in any castle in creation, and that I love you.
Oh, darling.
Oh, my sweet, my sweet. If I'd only known you were a phony from the first, the torture it would have saved me.
Sure, and what about... and what about me? So, from the beginning, I've been the victim of a hoax.
From the beginning, darling. That night in the casino at Monte Carlo. Daddy picked you out especially because you looked so honest and so dumb.
Of course, there have been other victims before.
A dozen of them. Oh, Robert, we've sold so many castles in this country for 3 times what they're worth. But...
And I suppose that each of your victims fell in love with you.
I'm afraid they did, Mr. Desmond. Do you mind too much?
Mind? Come here.
Come here?
I suppose you know that you're a shameless woman.
Completely.
And that you should be turned over to the nearest constable.
Exactly. Along with you.
Always. Always with me. From this day forward. You have my word on it.
Only your word, darling.
No, by heaven.
Oh, my darling. My own darling.
Yeah, Eileen, did you...
Mr.
Eileen,
sir.
Hi, Dad. How's the old man?
Greetings, Barclay. How's Trick?
Why? Well, really, Eileen, now I ask you, is that any way for you to...
Oh, relax, Dad, relax, or you'll stand out as comedy relief. We're playing this scene straight.
What?
This would seem to be wolf meeting wolf, Mr. O'Rourke. I'm not going to buy your traditions, and you're not going to buy my desert.
Oh, sir, you shouldn't have said that, sir, if you don't mind my saying...
Well, I do mind your saying it, Barclay, which reminds me, you're fired.
But if you can conceive of being an honest man again, we'll take you back to America with us. Right, Miss O'Rourke?
Right, Mr. Desmond.
Eileen, you mean we're going home?
I'll say we are.
Now that I think of it, I should have been back in America a long while ago. You know what, Barker?
What, sir?
As I recall it, there was a Desmond who practically molded American history. And if there wasn't, then there's going to be.
Nagel, ladies and gentlemen, the name of the play you've just heard is Dear Victim. I'd like to have you meet today's stars in person. And here they are, Maureen O'Sullivan and Herbert Marshall. Well, I think you both know without my saying so that we at the Silver Theater have enjoyed working with both of you immensely.
Thank you, Conrad. But I must give Maureen O'Sullivan due credit, for without her stellar acting and assistance on my Irish dialect, I should have been quite a lot.
Sure, I'm thinking that both of you have been kissing the Blarney Stone. No, seriously, though, it's been lots of fun, and I hope you'll ask me back again sometime.
We certainly shall, and now it's...
I know our time's getting short, Conrad, but our Mr. Marshall has an announcement that he tells me he must make.
Oh, all right, boy. Well, come on, get on with it.
Very well. Ladies and gentlemen, any dialects presented by me on this program are not to be confused with any dialects living or dead, and any such similarity is purely accidental. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, Mr. O'Sullivan. Good night, Bart. Miss O'Sullivan appeared on today's program through the courtesy of the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, where she is now appearing in a new Tarzan picture. Mr. Marshall may currently be seen in the Paramount picture Zaza, in which he is co-starring with Claudette Colbert. Next week, Silver Theater will star Ginger Rogers in another original story by Grover Jones and True Boardman, with more original music composed and conducted by Felix Mills. Be sure to listen. Silver Theater originates at Columbia Square in Hollywood. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Silver Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 26th, 1939 on CBS, featuring Maureen O'Sullivan and Herbert Marshall. Marshall surprisingly not in any motion pictures in the year of the broadcast, presumably filming his three. He would be in the following year, The Letter, A Bill of Divorcement, and a picture nominated for 6 Oscars, Foreign Correspondent, with Lorraine Day and Joel McRae. That wraps this hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.